Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we will get one take now on the debate raging over the confrontation at sea between the Israeli military and a flotilla challenging the Gaza blockade. But we will get more than that from our next guest as well. Rabbi Jonathan Sacks is the chief rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of Great Britain. That includes most of Britain's Orthodox Jews. Rabbi Sacks is also a member of the House of Lords and was knighted by Queen Elizabeth in 2005. And he has a new book called Future Tense, Jews, Judaism, and Israel in the 21st Century. He was already scheduled for this time, I might say, weeks ago, but with the current controversy, there is certainly plenty to talk about, even more to talk about. Rabbi Sacks, welcome to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Good to be with you.
And first, for some context, what does it mean to be the chief rabbi? American Jews don't recognize a chief rabbi and might tend to think that, you know, Catholics have a pope, but Jews don't have that kind of thing and maybe shouldn't have that kind of thing. So what does your title actually mean?
What it means is that I'm the religious leader of the Jewish community in Britain. And the Jewish community in Britain is configured as a religious community rather than as an ethnic one. And obviously Britain, like many European countries, has a much more centralized form of governance than the United States does. And so, you know, you don't have an Archbishop of Canterbury in the United States. Britain is small enough to have a single Jewish community and a single religious leadership, although in terms of representing Jewish interests, we have a secular body called the Board of Deputies.
But did you say that Judaism is seen in the UK more as a religious group and less as an ethnic group?
That's right.
You want to talk about that a little bit? Because American Jews listening right now probably think, or many of them do, gosh, we are very much both.
Yeah, I think so, because America has been a land of immigration and immigrants, so people are linked together in sub-communities of ethnicity. Whereas Britain has a pretty strong tradition of everyone feeling strongly British, and therefore we differ on matters of religion rather than anything else.
Interesting. And you represented yourself as chief rabbi of the greater Jewish community in the UK, not just the Orthodox, would you put it that way?
Well, the Orthodox community in Britain, as in many other countries, is actually the majority community, and that must seem very strange to American ears because I know it's not like that there. But we're about 70% of the community, and the same in France, in Italy, and so on. The same also.
That much.
In,
I think Reform is number one here, right?
Yeah.
In the United States.
Yeah.
There's a rabbi blogger in the U.S., Rabbi Shmuley Boteach, on JewishJournal.com. And he wrote in March about what he sees as a much more vibrant American Jewry than British Jewry. Tell me how much of this you agree with. He says the principal reason for the stagnant state of Anglo-Jewry relative to its American counterpart, Anglo-Jewry is profoundly hierarchical, while American Jewry is profoundly meritocratic. Britain, for example, has a chief rabbi who is the community's titular head, an ambassador to the wider community, while in America, a rabbi's standing is judged not by any communal appointment or particular title, but by effort and impact alone. So that's a challenge, you know, not to you as a person, but to the very existence of your position. So any reaction to Rabbi Shmuley?
Yeah. We have increased the number of Jewish children going to Jewish day schools in the last 17 years from 25% to 65%. We have the most vibrant adult education program of anywhere in the world. It's called IMUD, and it's been exported now from Britain to 47 other venues throughout the world, from Moscow to New York to Los Angeles. We have more people coming to Jewish Book Week in Britain than you do to Jewish Book Month in New York, despite the fact that American Jewry has 20 times as many Jews.
So you would argue with the premise, you would say that British Judaism is actually more vibrant?
It's been more vibrant the last little while than at any time in its 350-odd years of history. Yeah. It's undergoing an extraordinary renaissance.
The argument of your book, as you put it, is that the sense of isolation in Jewish hearts and minds must change. How do you mean that? Isolation in what sense?
I get the sense that Jews over the last decade or two, perhaps under the impact of the Holocaust, perhaps because of the return of anti-Semitism to Europe, and perhaps because of the isolation of Israel, have tended to define themselves in that biblical phrase as the people that dwells alone. It's our destiny to be friendless, to be isolated, not to be able to trust the world. Now, you know, I understand that and I sympathize with it, but it's destructive and dysfunctional and leads us not really to be able to inspire young Jews to continue the faith. It doesn't even help us to come to terms with our current problems.
You referred to the return of anti-Semitism to Europe. Had it gone away?
Yeah, it did, actually. There were periods, you know. The first time I ever in my whole life spoke about anti-Semitism was in 2002. I grew up, I attended non-Jewish schools and, of course, two British universities, and never in all those years did I encounter anti-Semitism. It is... Britain has been historically a very tolerant country, and Europe, mainland Europe, was busy, as it were, atoning for the Holocaust. So this is a pretty new phenomenon as far as I'm concerned.
Even in France?
Even in France. I call this a mutation of the virus of anti-Semitism. The new anti-Semitism is not the same as the old.
What's the mutation like?
Well, firstly, it focuses not on Jews as individuals, but on Jews as a nation with a state with its own land. In other words, it focuses on Israel. It is communicated not by national cultures, but by the new global media, especially the internet. And very often it's carried by human rights NGOs and things like that. It's not at all like the old anti-Semitism. In fact, in Europe, you tend to find that the old anti-Semitism was on the right wing of the political spectrum and the new is on the left wing.
Rabbi Jonathan Sacks is my guest on WNYC. He is the chief rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of Great Britain and is a member of the House of Lords, knighted by Queen Elizabeth in 2005. He has a new book called Future Tense, Jews, Judaism, and Israel in the 21st century. You know, there's been much discussion among American Jews recently about British anti-Semitism since the publication of the book Trials of Diaspora by Anthony Julius and the positive opinionated review in the New York Times Book Review by Harold Bloom. And the idea seems to be that liberal British intellectuals deny Israel's right to exist more than American liberal intellectuals do, and that anti-Zionism equals anti-Semitism. How much do you agree with the first premise, that there is more of this among the British intellectual left than the American one?
The British, I think it's accurate. The British intellectual left tends to be both anti-Israel and anti-American. So obviously you're not going to get that in America.
Although many liberals in America get labeled anti-American by the American right, but maybe that's another show. How much do you agree with the premise that anti-Zionism equals anti-Semitism?
Well, anti-Zionism is not in and of itself anti-Semitism. But it gets to be anti-Semitism when you brand all Jews as Zionist and therefore you're entitled to attack them. So when Jews are attacked in the streets or Jewish buildings are desecrated, these are not Israeli targets, these are Jewish targets. And this is anti-Semitism, however it's clothed and whatever motivates it.
Do you think that the British press coverage of the flotilla incident over the last few days has been different from the American press coverage? I don't know if you've looked to make a comparison, but I'm curious.
I don't think so. And if you want the most critical coverage of all, you'll find it in the Israeli media. You know, Israel is a very self-critical country. And I think that's part of its beauty and its refreshing gift to the Middle East. And I think, you know, disagreement about this policy or that is a perfectly legitimate part of democratic politics.
And there's certainly a lot of criticism in the Israeli newspaper Haaretz, for example, over the last few days about how even if the Israeli troops were provoked, that the story doesn't end there, that there has to be preparation for this kind of provocation that doesn't result in deaths of protesters.
Yeah. I can't possibly pass an opinion on this, but there was a very strong Israeli doctrine in the early years of the state and the years before the state called Havlaga, which meant self-restraint. And, you know, sometimes that kind of thing is necessary, but I don't want to pass judgment because I don't think all the facts are sufficiently clear as yet.
Well, given the news today about the flotilla deaths and the Gaza blockade as an underlying issue, does that play at all into your thesis of Jewish isolation, or is it unrelated?
Well, you know, Israel does feel that it has no friends left. And that's a very bad way to feel. I really feel that Israel has so much to offer the world. It is a country built out of immigrants and asylum seekers. It's a country that has achieved economic miracles. It's a country that has given so much to the international community by way of aid, disaster relief, and so on, by handing out and sharing its medical and agricultural technology. Israel really is a wonderful country, and it's surrounded by very implacable enemies. And I think it's very hard for us in safety, whether in Britain or America, to pass instant judgment.
Let me get your reaction to two paragraphs from Thomas Friedman's column about the incident and the blockade in the New York Times today. Part one, I think, will be easy for you. He says, I have a big problem when people get so agitated by Israel's actions in Gaza but are unmoved by Syria's involvement in the murder of the Prime Minister of Lebanon, by the Iranian regime's killing of its own citizens demonstrating for the rights to have their votes counted, by Muslim suicide bombers murdering nearly 100 Ahmadi Muslims in mosques in Pakistan on Friday, and by pro-Hamas gunmen destroying a UN-sponsored summer camp in Gaza because it wouldn't force Islamic fundamentalism down the throats of children. He writes that concern for Gaza and Israel's blockade is so out of balance with these other horrific cases in the region that it is not surprising Israelis dismiss it as motivated by hatred, not the advice of friends. You agree with that?
I think I have to.
Then part two, he says, but while there is no question that this flotilla was a setup, it is overwhelmingly in Israel's interest to bring more diplomatic imagination and energy to ending this Gaza siege. How long is this going to go on? Are we going to have a whole new generation grow up in Gaza with Israel counting how many calories they each get? What do you think about that? Which is to say that the Israeli control...
I think we have a genuinely tragic situation here. Egypt is doing the same, but very rarely commented on.
Egypt, that's a really interesting point. Egypt, until I think yesterday, was a part of the blockade of Gaza because Egypt didn't want, I guess Egypt didn't want what, the flood of refugees from Gaza across the border, or were there also other reasons?
Certainly that, and Egypt does not wish to see the kind of radicalism that exists in Gaza spread into its territory. So, you know, Tom is
although Egypt it gets complicated because Egypt is an autocratic government, and the Muslim Brotherhood and groups like that, which are banned, are part of the dissent from the autocratic government. Not to side with the Muslim Brotherhood, but it gets complicated as to Egypt's motivations.
I don't think anything gets much more complicated than the Middle East. Which is, you know, why I concentrate on being a rabbi rather than a politician.
Right. So that's Thomas.
I pray for peace. I work for peace. I'm a patron of any organization that works for peace in the Middle East, of many of them. And the ones that move me the most are, for instance, the bereaved parents group, Israelis and Palestinians, who've lost children in the current conflict, who have come together not so much because they love one another, but because they don't want to see other families bereaved. And, you know, I just want those voices for peace to be given weight and prominence. And other than that, you know, it's very, very hard to pass judgment.
Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, my guest for just another few minutes, Chief Rabbi of the United Hebrew Congregations of Great Britain. His new book is called Future Tense, Jews, Judaism, and Israel in the 21st Century. Before you go, according to your Wikipedia page, or the Wikipedia page about you, you've written that you're an enemy of Reform Judaism, the biggest...
No. Sorry.
And as such, refused... Let me finish the question. As such, refused to attend the funeral of a prominent and widely beloved Reform rabbi, Hugo Grin, from the West London Synagogue. Is that true?
No. What is the case is that no chief rabbi ever attended Reform funerals when I did the thing that had always hitherto been done, gone as the first individual to comfort the mourners. It became clear that we were in a new environment, so of course I attended the funeral of other prominent Reform and Conservative Jews ever since. I just saw that the previous practice in Britain was just not where we are as a community, and it wasn't right, and so I've changed the whole approach of the chief rabbinate to that. And we've been able to establish a pretty good set of working principles. They are on all matters that affect us as Jews, regardless of our religious differences. We work together, regardless of our religious differences. And on all matters that touch on those differences, we agree to differ, but with respect. And because of that, over these last 13, 14 years, relations between Orthodox, Conservative, and Reform have been much better than they were in the past.
Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, his book, Future Tense, Jews, Judaism, and Israel in the 21st Century. Very nice to talk to you.
Good to talk to you. Be well.
Brian Lehrer in WNYC, and still to come this hour, the author of a new book on how to tell the difference between science and bunk. There's a lot of confusion of the two in the media, you might have noticed. And with Al and Tipper kissing each other goodbye, we will look at the phenomenon of divorce in your 60s. Stay with us.